Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Tuesday morning. It's Tuesday, November 30th. It's Giving Tuesday. So if you're thinking about giving and maybe want to give a special gift and for someone maybe who has everything, as the old saying goes, then check out what I've posted on Facebook regarding EWTN and Ave Maria Radio. You could give to one or both. And we really appreciate your support, but what a wonderful thing to help keep us on the air. We greatly appreciate it. I have the information on my Facebook page at facebook.com/Mrs. Teresa Tomeo to donate both to EWTN and or Ave Maria Radio. And as Father Mitch says, and as Mother Angelica always said, keep us between your gas and electric bills. What we do here is so crucial right now in our world. We need the truth of the gospel to shine through, to shine brightly. And so many people are in need of truth and the beauty of the truth of the salvation of Jesus Christ. So one way to do that is to give the gift that keeps on giving all the way through eternity by supporting Catholic Radio. So just throwing that out there. Giving Tuesday has been around since 2012. Isn't that neat? So we're going to be talking about that a little bit later in the program with our friend Joe Conda from Catholic Speakers. Speaking of giving, they've come up with a really cool idea for parishes or organizations that couldn't normally afford, especially, you know, thanks to all the issues with COVID, to bring in a speaker or to put on a retreat with the speaker. So they've come up with a plan to help you raise the money, and it's really ingenious. And it could be, I think, the new way to conduct most of these events around the country, because I know as speakers, if you talk to, you know, my friend Kelly Walquist or Deacon Harold Berg Sivers, who's going to be on with us, I believe, is it tomorrow or Thursday, about his new book, all of us have been seeing a huge drop in speaking because, well, obviously a lot of parishes are struggling and organizations. It's difficult, not to mention with it, all the restrictions in some areas to put on retreats. It's coming back, but it's still slow. But this is what's neat about this idea that Catholic Speakers is doing, because it does make it affordable for the parishes or entities that don't have the budget but really want to bring Orthodox speakers to their area. So we'll talk with Joe Conda, kind of going backwards. I'm left-handed, so I tend to do that sometimes. So Joe's coming up at 49 minutes past the hour. We're going to start off, though, and this will be great, speaking with Dr. Michael Barber about his book, Here's a Concept, The True Meaning of Christmas. Dr. Barber is Associate Professor of Scripture and Theology at the Augustine Institute. Love their work in Colorado, outside of Denver. So that should be a great conversation with Dr. Mike. And then we go to Rome, Edward Penton joining us. He has a really good piece in the Register this morning, ncregister.com, about Italian pro-life Catholic lawyers opposing the nation's new COVID vaccine measures. It's just so sad what's going on. We did have some good news, and we'll get to that in the news in just a few minutes, where a federal judge, pushed back against Biden's mandates and says, no, you can't fire these healthcare workers. You can't force them to get the vaccine. Isn't it interesting how last year it was all about the healthcare workers and how they were heroes, and now some of these healthcare workers, many of them, are being punished because they are thinking, well, the vaccine isn't for me. Well, that's fine. It should be an individual choice. But now the administration says, oh, no, you're evil and you must be stopped, and so you must be punished. Well, you know what? There are judges that are pushing back, thanks be to God. We'll talk about that in the news coming up. So much to discuss this morning, what's going on over in Italy and other parts of Europe and attempts here in the United States to do the same thing. Edward Penton joining us live from Rome. So Dr. Michael Barber, Edward Penton, and Joe Condit. Let's see what's going on with the weather. It's pretty chilly in Michigan and the Midwest. Well, it is almost winter. It feels like winter, not technically yet on the calendar. But the good news is we have a story coming up later on in the news that it's going to be very mild in terms of what to expect from hurricanes in the near future. So we'll have a positive story on the weather. However, some areas, for example, in the Northwest, including Washington State, are still experiencing a lot of heavy rain and flash flooding. And another high wind event expected to impact Montana and Wyoming. critical fire weather concerns likely for Southern California, and a powerful storm impacting parts of Alaska with rain, snow, and gusty winds the next several days. So that's a general look at what's happening across the country. If you look at the weather map, looks overall pretty clear except for, let's say, northwest and certain parts of the country on the East Coast, some slight rainstorms moving in, but overall pretty clear across the good old U.S. of A. 5 minutes past the hour already. It is a Tuesday morning, Giving Tuesday. It's also the feast of St. Andrew the Apostle, who is buried, by the way, in the beautiful town of Amalfi, along the Amalfi coast. And if you'd like more information, I do have a new Tease Italy newsletter that's out today. You can find the link on Facebook. We have some information about St. Andrew and about his burial spot in Amalfi. We also have information about some other Italian saints, and we have a blog that I wrote regarding the scene of the Last Judgment in the Sistine Chapel and how we tie it into the Holy Souls, this being the last day of November. Now, the newsletter is free. You can go to my website at travelitalyexpert.com or go on my Facebook page at Facebook.com/Mrs. Teresa Tomeo to read it and to sign up. It's free. And as my friend Don always says, if it's free, it's for me. So there you go. All right, let's check the news and see what's happening in and around the world on your Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Mississippi's governor joining other pro-life leaders from across the state to defend the state's abortion law. In a recent interview, Governor Tate Reeves told NBC the court case puts Mississippi at the epicenter of the pro-life movement, and he's confident in the state's measure.
But clearly, I think that this law can be enacted within a changing confinement of Roe v. Wade, but I also believe that Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided. I believe in a simple reading of the United States Constitution that when Roe was decided in 1973, there is no fundamental right in our United States Constitution to an abortion. And furthermore, Chuck, I believe very strongly that if you read the Constitution, there is nowhere in the Constitution that prohibits individual states like Mississippi, to limit access to abortions.
The U.S. Supreme Court is set to hear arguments on Mississippi's law, which bans abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy, beginning tomorrow. A federal court in Missouri, as we mentioned earlier, blocking the Biden administration from enforcing a coronavirus vaccine mandate for healthcare workers at federally funded facilities in 10 states. A U.S. district judge in the Eastern District writing in his 32-page ruling that Congress did not grant the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, a federal agency within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the authority to mandate the vaccine. The judge's order will block the mandate in Missouri and 9 other states, which joined that lawsuit, including Nebraska, Arkansas, Kansas, Iowa, Wyoming, Alaska, South Dakota, North Dakota, and New Hampshire. The Pope is canceling a Roman tradition for the second year in a row, citing COVID-19 concerns. A public gathering at the Spanish Steps on December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, has been canceled. The Vatican says instead the Holy Father will perform a private act of devotion to Our Lady to avoid a crowd and the risk of spreading the virus. Francis is expected to ask the Virgin Mary to protect the Romans, the city, and the sick who need her maternal protection everywhere in the world. Catholic News Agency is reporting the Catholic Archdiocese of Paris presenting its plans for the restoration of the Notre Dame Cathedral's interior next week after it dismissed criticism that the proposal would turn the site into a kind of theme park. Officials submitting their proposals to France's National Heritage and Architectural Commission next week amid a new outcry over the restoration of the cathedral badly damaged by fire back in 2019. A news agency saying the Archdiocese denied foreign media reports that the celebrated French Gothic cathedral built between 1163 and 1345 risked being transformed into a theme park or filled with jarring contemporary art. The Daily Telegraph, a British newspaper, reporting on November 26, critics feared the changes could turn the building into a politically correct Disneyland. Again, there's more on this on the Catholic News Agency, catholicnewsagency.com website. Boston's new mayor, as James Rojas reports, facing her biggest challenge yet as a housing court judge overturns the city's pandemic-related eviction moratorium.
Mayor Wu says she's deeply concerned and disappointed by the decision made by a housing court judge. It was ruled yesterday the city of Boston overstepped its emergency health powers, with the judge going as far as saying such expansion of power by a government agency, even for compelling reasons, should be unthinkable in a democratic system of governance. The ban on evictions was put in place by then-acting Mayor Kim Janey in August, but now this becomes one of Mayor Wu's biggest challenges. She says they're seeking a stay on the decision to keep the moratorium in place as they look at other options.
Day two gets underway in the sex trafficking trial of a woman accused of recruiting underage girls for the late financier Jeffrey Epstein. Stephanie Goss tells us what happened on the first day in court.
Facing the jury for the first time, Ghislaine Maxwell sat listening as a prosecutor accused her of setting up young girls for Jeffrey Epstein. The assistant U.S. attorney telling the court the defendant was trafficking kids for sex. That is what this trial is all about.
She pleaded not guilty to all the charges she faces and has been held in jail since her arrest in New Hampshire back in July. Additional transcripts and exhibits in the investigation of sexual harassment allegations against former Governor Andrew Cuomo, as Lisa G reports, are being released.
The material, also including videos, comes from the state attorney general's office. The original report on Cuomo was released in August, but multiple district attorneys asked that transcripts and other evidence not be publicly released so their offices could determine whether to file criminal charges against Cuomo. After a criminal complaint against Cuomo was filed in October, evidence was released to comply with New York State's discovery laws.
Meanwhile, CNN host Chris Cuomo was much more involved in helping his brother, the former governor, during the state's probe of those sexual harassment charges. This is according to documents released yesterday, documents you just heard about, by the New York Attorney General's office. Chris Cuomo used his media connections, the documents say, to get information on the women who accused the former governor of sexual harassment. Cuomo has previously said he was advising his brother, but not to this extent. Cuomo's admission also contradicts what he told his bosses at CNN and the viewers in August when he claimed, "I never made calls to the press about my brother's situation." The anchor also admitted to investigators he provided the governor's office advice on his brother's messaging of his handling of the coronavirus outbreak. CNN management issuing a short statement saying they will be having conversations and seeking additional clarity about the significance as they relate to CNN. Meanwhile, journalists from liberal news organizations say they're stunned by the intensity with which the CNN anchor was involved in the governor's office and the investigation. Washington Post media critic, for example, said CNN should have conducted an internal investigation of all of Chris Cuomo's actions involving his brother's scandals. That should have happened months ago, he said. And Los Angeles Times reporter Matt Pierce insisting this is an embarrassment to journalism. The Facebook whistleblower will be back testifying before the House. That's tomorrow. Frances Haugen will discuss a provision that protects tech companies from being held responsible for content posted on their platforms by third parties. This is her second time on the Hill following last month's Senate hearing on her leaked internal documents about Facebook research on child safety issues regarding Instagram and other platforms. More smash-and-grab robberies over the holiday weekend in California, and one tough-on-crime prosecutor, as John Libertini explained, says, blame it on the laws.
As many as 20 people rushed to Home Depot in Lakewood Friday night. The flash mob making off with sledgehammers, crowbars, and other heavy tools.
They had the sledgehammers ready to hit people who were trying to stop them.
From Beverly Hills to San Francisco, smash-and-grab robbers have broken windows and cases and made off with high-end merchandise.
They're much more pro-criminal than they are about accountability.
Anne-Marie Schubert, a tough-on-crime DA in Sacramento, says Propositions 47 and 57 have led to a soft-on-crime stance by top prosecutors in L.A. and San Francisco.
If you decriminalize crime, which is to some extent what many of these laws have done, you're going to get more crime.
In Southern California, the fear is those tools may be used in the next rash of smash-and-grab robberies.
A Houston man will serve more than 9 years in prison after scamming the Paycheck Protection Program out of more than $1 million. The Justice Department says 30-year-old Lee Price III submitting fake PPP loan applications to two different lenders for three phony businesses. Price, applying for more than $2 million in loans and receiving more than $1 million, which he spent on a Lamborghini, a Ford truck, a Rolex, office space, and apparently a lot of time at local nightclubs. He pleaded guilty in September to wire fraud and money laundering. A judge sentenced him yesterday. Trey Thomas tells us the Federal Trade Commission is investigating what's causing ongoing supply chain disruptions that are causing hardships for consumers.
The agency is ordering companies like Walmart, Amazon, Kroger, Procter & Gamble, and Kraft Heinz to turn over information to help study the causes of empty shelves and high prices. Supply chains have been bottlenecked amid recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic.
Some Amazon warehouse workers in Alabama are getting another chance to unionize. A federal labor official calling for a new vote yesterday. The first one held in April failed to get enough support for a union to represent nearly 6,000 workers. And finally, in our news segment at 14 minutes past the hour on Giving Tuesday, 14 minutes past the hour, it is November 30th. After another busy hurricane season, Erica Rodriguez tells us, looks like the tropics will be quiet as we wrap up 2021.
After 21 named storms, seven of which became hurricanes, four major hurricanes, hurricane season officially comes to a close today.
You can never say never, but at least for the next week or two, pattern does not look very favorable whatsoever.
AccuWeather lead hurricane forecaster Dan Kutlosky says along with nearly having to go into an alternate list of names, this season will also likely go down as the fourth most costly tropical cyclone season on record in the Atlantic Basin. Looking to next season, he thinks we could see a neutral pattern. If we go into El Nino, there could be fewer storms.
It's a Tuesday. Hope you're doing well. 15 minutes past the hour. When we come back during this Advent, we'll be talking with Dr. Michael Barber about his book, From Ignatius, The True Meaning of Christmas. Stay tuned.
CMF Curo is a Catholic healthcare ministry providing families nationwide with a better solution centered around whole health, spirit, mind, and body. Our members share their medical burdens within a faith-filled community. At CMF Curo, our members have access to a spiritual director, concierge services, and other health and spiritual resources. Find out if CMF Curo is a better solution for your family. Visit MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Nestled under the warm Florida sun is a university whose name indicates a vocational call. Ave Maria, Latin for Hail Mary, recalls the angel Gabriel's announcement to Mary of her future vocation, becoming the Mother of God. Enriched by God's grace, Mary freely ascends to this call. This is the model for all students. Come to Ave Maria University, where you'll be empowered to clearly see your vocational call, whatever that call might be. Ave Maria University, your vocation location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection, 17 minutes past the hour. The true meaning of Christmas. There's a concept for you. The birth of Jesus and the origins of the season by our guest, Michael Patrick Barber. Beautiful book, and the cover is gorgeous as well. And it's so important, and we're just talking to Dr. Barber during the break about how it is so important to get people back to church, because there's many people who fell away during COVID, and especially this time of year, now that we can, thanks be to God, go back to Mass in most places. What an opportunity, and this book is such a great resource. And Dr. Barber, what I love about it is the way you've broken it down, the chapters. You use the title of various Christmas carols, and I mean traditional Christmas carols, hymns. I mean, these are beautiful hymns talking about, well, I'll Be Home for Christmas is special, of course, but O Come, Come Emmanuel, Christ is Born of Mary, What Child Is This, Away in a Manger. How did you come up with this idea to use these titles for your chapters? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. It was pretty natural. I just really wanted to talk about things that I know people already love. And the easiest way to do that, the easiest way in, is to begin with what's familiar. And everybody knows these Christmas songs, but most people don't know what they mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Silent Night round yon virgin, mother and child. What does that mean, round yon virgin, right? So there are so many parts of these songs that we sing, but we don't really think about very much. And I felt like it was a pretty easy way to catch people's attention and to, you know, make them interested in Christmas.
Yeah, and this is a book, too, that can be passed on with great information and background about, as the title says, a true meaning of Christmas, correct?
That's right, yeah. So there's a lot of really unreliable information out there. I'm a Bible scholar, and I frequently get frustrated when I hear some of the same things said over and over and over again that are just actually not true. And so it was, in a certain sense, I wanted to set the record straight, but I feel like the more clear we are about Christmas, the more deeply we can enter into the joy and the meaning of the season.
Yeah, amen to that. We're talking with Dr. Michael Patrick Barber. He is Associate Professor of Scripture and Theology at the Augustine Institute, of course, in Colorado. So let's talk about some of those myths that frustrate you when folks talk about Christmas.
Right. Well, one of the things that is not just frankly not true, we often hear that Jesus was laid in a manger because there was no room in the inn, right? And when you hear that, no room in the inn, it's a little confusing. What's going on there? Is there some kind of like no vacancy sign in Hotel Bethlehem, where Jesus was born? What is this inn? Well, actually, in the Greek, that's not the word. The word doesn't mean inn at all. And so what I wanted to show is the actual word that's used there is kataluma, which is actually the word for room. So a better way to read it would be there's no space in the room. It's the same word that's used later in Luke's gospel for the upper room. It's the same word for room. And so it's really significant that Jesus is laid in a manger because the manger serves as a substitute for the room. And when he's later in the room, what does he do? He tells us he needs food. Mm-hmm. He says, take this, eat this, this is my body. And so what happens at the Christmas story? Well, the Christ child is laid in a manger, which is nothing less than a feeding trough, right? So Jesus goes where the food is. And that scene is meant to anticipate what happens later on in the upper room when he gives himself to us as food. So every Christmas, we're thinking about Christ's mass. That's what the word actually means, Christ's mass. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And every mass is a little Christmas, because at every mass, Jesus is coming to us once again, not just in the flesh, but to give himself to us as food. Right. So that's one basic thing. It's like, oh, people don't see that because the translation is kind of obscuring the connection to the upper room there.
So what else? That's one of them. But give us one more before we take a break.
Another one. Okay. The idea that Santa Claus is an enemy to people of Christian faith. The idea that Santa Claus is like the symbol of the secular Christmas and all this stuff. Actually, Santa Claus comes from St. Nicholas.
Right,
and,
right.
And if you go back and look at the stories of St. Nicholas, they're really edifying and quite beautiful. And I told a story in the book of how people in America came to adopt Santa Claus as the patron saint of Christmas. It was because Protestants, not Catholics, Protestants you normally don't like saints, Protestants realized that they needed a figure to give people someone to emulate. This is what it's like to be Christ-like. I tell the whole story in the book, but it's an amazing, amazing journey from Nicholas to Santa Claus, and it was really all done in Protestant circles. So what happened in the Middle Ages was French nuns began giving gifts to children, and they would sign the gift from St. Nicholas, because Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount that you should give in such a way that your right hand doesn't know what your left hand is doing. Mm. And so from very early on, it was understood that to be a Christian giver was to be a secret Santa, right? We don't want people to know where the presents come from in accord with Jesus' message. And in fact, if you read the early life of Nicholas, he lived that principle. He gave gifts in secret. So he becomes kind of like the Christian saint that is like the patron saint of what it means to live out that mandate from Christ, to give in a secret way.
Go ahead,
your Father who sees in secret will reward you, Jesus says, right? And that's where the whole idea for Santa Claus comes from, really.
It's so frustrating to me that people don't look further into the life of St. Nicholas, because we know his tomb is buried in Bari at the beautiful cathedral there. I've been there. And his life story about how he defended the faith, I mean, it's really beautiful. So if you only concentrate on the image of Santa Claus and don't look at the life of this great saint, you're missing so much.
Yeah, one of the things that frustrates me about him, too, is he was a gentle, holy man, and this idea that he hit or struck the heretic Arius at the Council of Nicaea is completely not true. There's no evidence to support that whatsoever. And it really bothers me that people want to propagate this myth of him basically being some kind of Christian bully or something like that. Totally not true. There's no historical evidence to support that whatsoever.
How did that get started then? Because that's a lot of what he's known for, but I thought it was more in a good way, not promoting violence, but that he just got so frustrated with the ridiculous nature of what they were trying to say about Christ. How did that get started?
This comes hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of later after him. Somebody mentions this in a later account of his life, but it's not in the ones that are the earliest, the most reliable, or even in the ones that are the most famous. It didn't happen.
he's still a great saint to emulate, though, as you mentioned. More with Dr. Barber on his book. It's a great gift for now, and actually, forever to have. The True Meaning of Christmas, The Birth of Jesus and the Origins of the Season. It is from our friends at Ignatius Press. More with Dr. Barber when we come back.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
There's a simple step to raising a more grateful child. I used to say, easy, eliminate half of their material possessions. I don't say that anymore. That's ridiculous. I say 75%. They don't even miss 50. 22 stuffed animals, you go down to 11. Not exactly a hardship. Simple step to raising a more grateful child. Don't be so free with the material stuff. Research has shown more generous people, by and large, have less. You give a child less, he's more willing to share it. He also is more able to occupy himself with things like boxes and dirt balls and rocks, worms, stuff that doesn't cost a whole lot of anything.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
John chapter 11, verses 21 to 26. This is the story of Lazarus. Lazarus has died. Lazarus is one of his best friends. Just before this passage, we hear the news that Martha and Mary send word to Jesus that the one you love is sick. And the next line in the scripture is, now because Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus, he stayed where he was. His friend's in need. He can heal. They've seen him heal before. And yet somehow, because he loves him, he stays. And Lazarus dies. And then Jesus shows up 3 days later and is greeted by Martha and Mary, who confront him with the words, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would never have died. Rather applicable for many of us in our lives. We ask the Lord to do one thing because we're certain it is what we think is best, when in fact he has something which far surpasses what we asked for. Challenge is, in waiting for that to happen, we go through very trying times, which oftentimes makes us wonder, does he really care?
Okay, I have so many questions, and there's so much good information in this book. I really have to have Dr. Barber back on. The beautiful book is A True Meaning of Christmas, The Birth of Jesus and the Origins of the Season. And you can find it at the Religious Catalog. Of course, Dr. Barber is a Bible scholar, as he said. He's Associate Professor of Scripture and Theology at the wonderful Augustine Institute in Colorado. They do such great work. All right, seriously, I have so many questions. And as I said, as a fellow writer and author, I love the way you broke this book down using the titles of various Christmas carols that are near and dear to our hearts. In your first chapter, Dr. I'll Be Home for Christmas, the introduction, you have a section here, What Everyone Should Know About Christmas. What were the most important points you were trying to get across here?
Right. Well, the main thing that I wanted to explain to people is that Christmas ultimately has its home in the story of Jesus' birth in the Bible, right? And so if we want to experience that homecoming that we often sing about, I mean, there are many, it's funny, right? There's no catalog of Labor Day music, right? It'd be hard to think of too many New Year's Day songs. You might think of one or two songs, but Christmas has its own catalog, right? And so many of those songs tap into things that are near and dear to our heart, and we often think about, for example, going home for Christmas. I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams, right? Or I'm dreaming of a white Christmas like the ones I used to know. And so we have these deep aspirations that are connected, that are bound up with Christmas. But oftentimes people end up disappointed and disillusioned at Christmas because they feel like, well, it wasn't all that I was hoping it would be this year. And what I want to explain to people is if you really want to enter into Christmas for all it's worth, you've got to understand that it's ultimately about, well, what's in the name? Christ, Mass, right? These two things is really what is at the heart of Christmas. And if we want to find homecoming, if we want to find reconciliation, if we want to enter into that peace that the angels talk about in the story of the angels in the field in Luke chapter 2 that Linus from the Snoopy movie tells so well, if we really want to enter into that, then we have to recognize that Christmas has its deepest meaning in the story of God giving us the greatest gift of all, and that is his Son who comes to save us.
Okay, I want to jump forward to chapters 8 and 9 because I love the shepherds and I love their story. And also, I think the Magi are pretty amazing in terms of what they went through to follow the star and what we know about them. And we know that everything is kind of pulled together in the manger scenes, and we know that there's separation between when they actually visited Christ. But I think their story of even though they weren't right Jewish, they still understood the stars and they followed it. So let's go first to angels we have heard on high. Now, I'm sure you've been to the Holy Land and in Bethlehem, Shepherd's Field, which to me, you get this impression that it looks a lot like it would have looked 2,000 plus years ago. You're standing there overlooking the valley, and you can imagine it. And I know that actually in terms of excavations that they've done, they found some very interesting writing on the walls there confirming that this actually was the spot. So tell us about, you talk in here about shepherds and the tidings of comfort and joy. What was your main point in this chapter, Doctor?
Well, one of the amazing things about that whole scene is that it's juxtaposed against the backdrop of Caesar's census, right? So we don't have time to get into all the details, but basically everyone has to go to their hometown to be enrolled because the king of the world at the time, the king of Rome, Caesar, had demanded it. And against that backdrop, we have the birth of Christ the king. But he's born in very humble circumstances. And so from a worldly perspective, it looks like Caesar is the one who's calling all the shots. But the angels come and let us know that, no, here is the true king. So we have these angels appear, and we read that there appeared with the first angel a multitude of heavenly hosts. What is that word, host? It's not someone who entertains guests at a party, you know, but I think that's what people hear, right? The word host there in Greek is stratia, and it's the word that's used for armies, right? And so the idea is here you have the heavenly armies who have come, who are far more powerful than the Roman soldiers at the command of the emperor. But you have these heavenly armies, and what are they doing? They're not brandishing swords. They're brandishing songs. They're worshiping the Christ King. And they sing a song that we all know, Glory to God in the Highest. It's what we sing every Sunday because, like I said earlier, every Mass is a little Christmas because just as Jesus comes to us in a manger in the Christmas story, he comes to us in the Eucharist. And so we sing the same song that happened when heaven touched down to earth in Bethlehem, right? And well, what's interesting then is Gregory the Great, who writes in the 500s, points out that it was angels who barred humanity from the Garden of Eden. After Adam and Eve sinned, he says there was discord between us and the angels, right? There's a cherubim, and a cherubim is a heavenly being, and in Christian tradition comes to be understood as an angel, right? Well, Gregory says it's significant then that on the night of Jesus' birth, it's angels who announce that we are now no longer cut off from their friendship. So in the Garden of Eden, a cherub is given a sword to prevent humanity from entering into the garden. But Gregory the Great says that while there was discord between us and the angels because of sin, now that Christ the King has come, the angels are now at peace with us, and they put away the remembrance of ancient discord. So the angels are really significant and mark what Leo the Great would call the birthday of peace, right? Mm. Peace between heaven and earth. We can now worship with the angels alongside of them and honor and adore Christ the King.
All right, real quickly, we have about 30 seconds left. I want you to give like a quick summary why the shepherds, because I think this is so... Oh, we actually have 2.5 minutes. Okay, good. Okay. I'm scared. So the shepherds, go ahead.
Okay, shepherds are not unclean like some people say, but shepherds are very lonely. And so the idea is that while Caesar, the emperor, doesn't know what's going on in his own kingdom, these lowly shepherds are the ones who are told the message of Christ's birth, and it really fits in with the larger message that Mary explains in her Magnificat in the Gospel of Luke, which is the same gospel, that God brings down the mighty from the thrones and raises up the lowly. And so we see in the Christmas story that God raises up the lowly, the shepherds, to be the first to know what is going on in Caesar, who has the power and order everyone to go to their own homes, has no idea what has just transpired in his kingdom.
Wow. Okay, so here's the deal. You have to come back. There's so many questions I have because this is such a beautiful way to really understand the true meaning of Christmas, as the title of the book says. So I'm hoping, Doctor, that you can come back and we can dive more deeply into this. This is just fantastic. And it's so important when you come to really understand the meaning, everything just opens up to you. And I'm sure this is why you wrote this book.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things. Why we have the ox and the donkey, and that's not even in the Bible story. Why is that in the manger scene? So we can talk about that some other time, but there's so much there. Once you begin to understand the history, the theology, the meaning of the biblical stories, the more you're able to enter into the joy of Christmas and really able to enter into the mystery that it's meant to celebrate.
Yeah, this is a great book to get and really just to have with you to truly understand it, because not just for the Christmas season, but as you said, Doctor, to understand the connection between the manger and the Mass, as in Christ Mass. Doctor, thanks so much. His new book is The True Meaning of Christmas, The Birth of Jesus and the Origins of the Season. You can get it through Ignatius Press or through the EWTM Religious Catalog. Great discussion with Dr. Barger. We are definitely having him back on because I have like a gazillion other questions that I want to ask, and I know that you want to know about as well. Really great book, very beautifully put together. We'll be right back. We'll head over to Roma and speak with Edward Penton on a Tuesday. Stay tuned.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we love to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band, and I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church. And I was just a child, but I said, you know, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another. And week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Miracles are miracles because they're different than regular daily life. A miracle is a reminder that something beyond nature can act within nature. Miracles are meant to open our eyes that more is always going on than just the normal humdrum of the daily life. Miracles are supposed to make us realize that our moral choices are impacting an invisible world that once in a while breaks through into our workaday world. The Blessed Mother predicted the miracle of the Son, and she made it clear that she was using it as proof of the truth of her message. In other words, when the sun stops dancing and you get back to church, to work, to home, remember what's at stake when you pray the rosary.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. It's Catholic Connection. Last day of November, Tuesday, November 30th. Hope your Advent is going well so far. We had some good news in the United States regarding mandates. A federal court in Missouri blocking the Biden administration from enforcing a coronavirus vaccine mandate for healthcare workers at federally funded facilities in 10 states. This came out yesterday from Judge Shelp in the Eastern District of Missouri, writing in his 32-page ruling that Congress did not grant the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, a federal agency within the Department of Health and Human Services, the authority to mandate the vaccine. So there is some relief right now for these workers in 10 states. Not the case overseas in Italy and other places where they're really cracking down, but pro-life lawyers are speaking out there opposing the totalitarian, as they refer to it, new COVID vaccine measures. And Edward Penton, based in Rome for the Register, has a terrific article on this, very informative. Edward, thanks for joining us. Happy Advent.
Hi, Teresa. Same to you. Good to be with you.
All right. So what's the latest? Deacon Dom and I were just there for a trip for the Vatican Patrons of the Arts. We did see some protests going on. Apparently, this big one happened in the picture that you have in your article on the Register on the 20th, where people were gathering in Rome to protest these new COVID vaccine measures. What's happening in Italy right now, Edward?
Well, they've just, last week, they said they were going to implement or impose this new super green pass, which means that that they're going to tighten up the restrictions, and they're going to make them from December the 6th. You're going to have to either be vaccinated or recently recovered from COVID in order to enter an indoor restaurant or bar or other public venues such as a cinema or theatre. And so this goes quite a bit further. Already you had the green pass since August this year, in which you had to have you had to be either vaccinated or recently recovered or had a negative test in order to actually work. That came in September. So you had, in order to go to work, you had to have a green pass. So you had to show all these three things, one of these three things. And so they're really tightening the rules quite a lot here. And obviously there's quite a lot of backlash, but not as much as you might expect, because over 70% of the population have had two vaccinations. So that instantly sort of neutralizes a lot of the opposition, which is also concerning a lot of people, that there isn't that much opposition to this, which, as these lawyers said, is very much a shift, if you like, as they see it, towards a totalitarian state.
So what are the pro-life lawyers doing to push back against this?
Well, they take some cases, some of those who are suspended from employment, for example, because they don't want to have a green pass. They've had some success in trying to at least help them keep their jobs, or at least continue working to some extent, or find a way around it. So they're trying to defend these clients of theirs, but also they're issuing statements, and quite strong statements, saying how this is unjust, this is wrong, this goes against Catholic social teaching, and that it's really not correct. And in fact, the Vatican, of course, as we know, issued a directive last year saying that COVID vaccinations should be voluntary.
Voluntary.
They mustn't be mandatory. So this is all a breach of that. But the other very noticeable thing about this is that the Church has been really silent, and they issued a statement, a strong statement last week, criticizing the bishops, particularly in Italy, who have been very much not only silent but actually coercive as well, and they've been pushing very much faithful to get these vaccines, but also backing the mandates as well.
So what happens then if you've got the bishops who are kind of weighing in on this, and along with the same tone of the government? What hope do those folks have who feel, for whatever reason, it's entirely, as the Church stated, as you mentioned last year, that this should be a voluntary?
Well, that's a good question, Teresa, because there is no real backing from the Church. So you get the occasional priest, there's a priest in Sicily who's been speaking out in defense of the faithful who don't feel they should get the vaccine, and they feel it's within their conscience rights not to get it. You've got another priest up in northern Italy in Trieste who also was speaking out But as far as the senior hierarchy are concerned, the bishops and cardinals, there's really nothing at all. There are no comments, absolute silence, I would say.
Because many people who are vaccinated are fine with people having making their own choices. And just because they're vaccinated doesn't mean that they agree with these mandates. And, I mean, that's what's happening here in the United States. But so what recourse do they have, do you think, these lawyers? What do they think will happen next?
I'm not sure what they think will happen next. It's these rules, this super green pass is in force until January the 15th. So we'll see what happens then. But the sense is that it's going to continue, especially with this new variant that they're worried about, that this is going to continue beyond January the 15th. But there's really not a lot they can do. I mean, I did ask Cardinal Pietro Parolin, because the green pass, of course, is in force in the Vatican as well. They have their own green pass. And I asked the Secretary of State whether there could be any exemptions for conscience rights, and he simply reiterated his decree, which said that, you know, if you don't want to have to be vaccinated, then you have to get the test. So that's the way that they see it. But with this new pass that they're bringing in, that option is no longer there. So they are essentially mandating it in a sort of subtle way, well, subtle way, but it's certainly a mandate of a kind. And so, but you'd think the Vatican might weigh in, or the bishops might weigh in because of that, but they haven't.
Do you think they will eventually, or sooner than later? Or what's your sense of this right now? Probably not.
I think probably not. I think they're very much on board with this, and I think they're afraid to go against the government. They've been very compliant with the government from the beginning. In fact, they were some of the first. I think the Vicariate of Rome was one of the first to actually close the churches, for example, when the COVID pandemics began, and that they closed the churches without the Vatican even asking them to. So they've been very full on with this and very, very concerned about the whole thing, but and some would say in an exaggerated way, and that doesn't seem to show any sign of changing, and they seem to be continuing that in that route, down that in that same vein, I would say.
What's frustrating is there are more and more studies being done, even one that came out just recently from the CDC. And again, if people want to get the vaccine, that's entirely up to them. That's what the church says. They're showing, though, that people who are vaccinated are still likely to pass on COVID. And so there seems to be more and more information that, okay, the vaccine does help in some ways in terms of people get COVID, they're not as sick. But in the other ways, you're still seeing the disease spread among the vaccinated and the vaccinated getting sick. So how can Italy... And this is what's so interesting to me, is how Italy and other countries, including our own administration, the Biden administration, pushing back so strongly, saying this is the answer, when their own studies within the government are showing that not to be true.
Yes, this is a great mystery, Teresa. And why, when they've been shown to be ineffective, are they now pushing the boosters, which could be effective for a short time, but not for any length of time? So why should they be mandating it? That's one of the questions, I think, that's being asked. How can you mandate a vaccine which only has a limited effectiveness, or is not effective at all and doesn't, as you say, prevent transmission? So it's a very strange approach, a policy approach that they're taking, and it's obviously that's led to a lot of people to be suspicious that there's something more afoot. And these lawyers talked about a sinister game that they feel is being played, and that it's all about
control,
sort of globalist moving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all about control and moving, as they say, in a single globalist direction with the consequent end of national sovereignty. That's what they think is happening. And that seems to be quite a prevailing view here, I think, among those who are opposed to it.
Well, there's certainly a lot of questions that need to be answered that aren't being answered. And again, the church has said repeatedly, in addition to, in the United States, many bishops have come out saying this as well, that any vaccine is voluntary. It's not mandated. You have a right to make a decision based on your own conscience. Edward, great report. Thanks. And we'll come back to you to see what the latest is with those Italian lawyers standing up for those who feel that it is their right not to get vaccinated if they so choose. That's what the church says, okay? And you can go to the Register for more information on Edward's latest article, ncregister.com, and we'll also post it in our archive section. And again, the title of this excellent piece, latest piece from Edward Penton, based in Rome, Italian pro-life Catholic lawyers oppose nation's totalitarian new COVID vaccine measures. It is 48 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back on Tuesday, November 30th. Stay tuned.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Jam-packed show today. Our next interview, next up on the Hit Parade, 50 minutes past the hour on Catholic Connection on a Tuesday morning edition, November 30th, last day of November. You know, a lot of organizations and parishes and dioceses are struggling financially due to COVID, and lots of folks, unfortunately, not going back to church. Some are, but tithing down. And it just may be difficult for a parish to begin with to bring in a speaker or to have a retreat, even though they really want to do so. Well, there is a brand new effort, which actually is perfect for Giving Tuesday, which is one of the reasons we wanted Joe Condon on with us this morning from Catholic Speakers to talk about this, because this really is a brilliant idea that can help you, your organization, your men's group, your women's group, have a retreat or bring a speaker, even if you don't have the finances for it. So, Joe, this is something you were telling me about this over the weekend, that you said you felt like one of the Beatles, where you woke up in the middle of the night and wrote the song all at once, right? It just came to you. So let's talk about this idea and what it could mean to bring really good Orthodox events to a parish or a diocese near you.
No, Teresa, thanks for having me on again. And yes, it was. We're really excited about this initiative. So at Catholic Speakers, obviously, we worked with over 450 diocese-approved speakers. And through COVID, we watched them suffer. You know, we had over 500 events canceled in 2020 alone. And one of the things that we've struggled with, as well as a lot of event organizers struggle with, is budget. And for 17 years of doing this, we finally launched a platform called Spread the Faith. It's on our homepage. Just go to CatholicSpeakers.com and learn all about it. What it basically allows is crowdfunding. Now anybody in the world can help fund a Catholic speaker by simply making a donation. That donation goes to Spread the Faith. Spread the Faith that takes that donation and attributes it or credits it to a parish, Catholic conference, Catholic event, which what's happening there is two things. The event gets funded and the speaker gets supported. And so we're really excited about it. It's something that's really hopefully going to change the way that we look at evangelization and hopefully makes a lot more Catholic conferences, events, and just gatherings as a whole happen and grow as we continue to try and spread the faith and the Word of God.
So anybody can give to this, right? You don't have to be talking about or concerned with a particular event that you'd like to have. This is something you can do. You could do a monthly donation, and then it goes into this big pot, so to speak, and then you're going to be distributing it to those who need the budget to cover an event, correct?
Exactly. So right now it goes into, we'll keep calling it One Big Pot. We at Spread the Faith Catholic Speakers Organization will then allocate that money to those that need it or those that are trying to put on an event. We are making it to where you'll be able to donate toward a specific speaker. So we're really thinking ahead on doing the best we can to support getting speakers out there because the world needs their message. But yes, anybody can donate. It's the best thing you can do when it comes to evangelizing the Word of God on Giving Catholic, on Giving Tuesday, and knowing that your donation is going straight to help a Catholic speaker. And the best part about it, Teresa, is any donor will get an annual letter letting them know the exact conference they helped and the exact speaker they helped.
Yeah,
as a follow-up.
That's awesome. Now, how do you know if the folks are in need? Not saying that people would, you know, not be honest, but you want to make sure that this is something that the parishes really need, because there could be some who are really in need and others not so much. So how do you determine that?
It's such a good question. We get that. We've been getting that, actually. And, you know, we're in a unique situation with CatholicSpeakers.com. We have set the table for 17 years where we worked with thousands and thousands of events across the world. So like when vetting our speakers, we have a 10-step process where we vet the conference. And there's going to be a lot of new conferences, we hope, try and contact us to first have a speaker at their parish. So we put them through a process. We find out who they're with. One of the things that we try and do is only give to nonprofits, which is a really good gate. But we're not going to just not give to not nonprofits, right? We're going to try and help everyone. But that's just an example of trying to make sure we stay within the confines and making sure that the people that are contacting us are truly in need of help. We help vet them. We help them, you know, contact people in their parishes or in their surrounding community to help raise money for them. And also, it is an honor code. I mean, really, if and we are very clear about it. Like, look, after we've gone through the process, if you truly don't need this fund, you're taking it from another event or church that does. So we do have a process in place. You know, of course, improvement on everything, but we think that we're going to be pretty much 99% dead on as we launch it.
Yeah, and what I like is that the speakers that you represent, and there are many of us, I'm one of them obviously, but there's so many on EWTN and Catholic Radio that you represent. We're all Orthodox, and we go through a very strict screening before we're even able to affiliate with a group like Catholic Speakers. Joe, real quick, what's the website again?
Go to CatholicSpeakers.com. Spread the Faith Initiative for Give Tuesday, Give Catholic is on our homepage. You can't miss it, and they can read all about it. We're hoping everybody participates to support a good Catholic speaker and event.
Amen. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate all your hard work, and you guys have a great Tuesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow on a Wednesday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.